Hello everyone, welcome back to today's class. In today's session, we'll look at some of the challenges when it comes to project estimation. So just to recollect, we looked at some of the project estimation techniques, and in the previous class, we also looked at places or situations where the project estimation techniques have to be applied. So let us look at some of the challenges that we would face. Obviously, we will start by looking at a high level picture of the project estimation techniques and why it is important to recognize the challenges of the estimation. And then we categorize into the different challenges. So the different buckets that you see, there could be, say, estimation challenges which could come because of unclear requirements, requirements that are not properly documented, or requirements that keep changing over a period of time, a poor design that was earlier envisaged, and the entire estimate was built on that particular design, and if the design has changed, then what are the implications? So it's like saying while decorating your house, while doing interior designing work, you've had a specific design, and then maybe while the work has started, you've thought of changing the design. So obviously, because the design has changed, the overall time to create the entire thing will also change, right? Also, needless to say, the effort involved, the cost involved, the resources, people involved, etc. The entire estimate will go haywire if you change the design. So we'll look about we'll talk about the design aspect in more detail. Not splitting the task enough. So if you have a high level task, you are not mentioning the individual activities, and you are not estimating the efforts required for those individual activities, not functioning the dependencies, not capturing the dependencies in the right way. So say the risk register is not really maintained, you've not thought about dependencies, maybe dependencies on resources, or say there is a change in the external environment, in the regulatory framework, or say dependency on the hardware infrastructure, say if it is hosted in a third-party data center, then the cost of a third-party data center, or the time that it takes to set up the third-party data center, and so on. So not allocating or not accounting for the dependencies, building in a lot of buffer. Now we saw in the previous class where we saw the topic of overestimation. Although we kind of agree that overestimation or a bit of buffer is required, but how much buffer should be incorporated? If a lot of buffer is incorporated, then the estimate becomes unrealistic in nature. Maybe there could be things like trust issues with the business stakeholders and so on. Things like looking at say a top-down scheduling method. Top-down is from the you start with the business objective and then do the estimation basis that, not looking at the individual components. Looking at say the perceived risk of an analogous estimate, a estimate which is applicable for one particular industry, not customized for the new industry. What are the risks involved, and how inaccurate can those be? And things like say ignoring the team capacity. Say typically, if you have a small team size to work with, then undermining the role that people play, or the time it would take if it's a small team to complete the job, etc., etc. Scope creep that is an inherent part of every project. Obviously, if the scope changes, then It's like saying that the effort that will be needed might have to be reworked. Novel features, absolutely unique, which no one had worked on. Say a legacy code has to be supported on a new platform. So say you have a legacy feature that has to be supported, say in a new thing like a Kubernetes world or a microservices architecture, and a monolithic application to be supported on this new framework. So how challenging is that to achieve? Resource efficiency, do the resource have the right kind of skill set to deliver the results that we are looking at? Lack of clarity and execution strategy. Again, it's good to have an idea, but then it's good to have things in place, documented. But how do you actually implement it is the real key. And overall uncertainty that is involved around the project, right? So we all understand that some risks or some contingency has to be factored. But there are a lot of unknowns on uncertainties around the project. So that poses one of the challenges as well. So we'll look at all of these with relevant industry-specific examples as we move along, and then build our understanding on top of that. So it's going to be exciting, so stay tuned, and hope this session will be informative to you. So the IT industry has a reputation for being terrible at setting realistic deadlines. And why is that so? Because every business stakeholder wants to achieve two things, right? One, achieve the project or ensure that the project gets delivered in the quickest possible time frame, and B, in the lowest possible cost, right? So like we say, right, we want the best, as in the best quality, the best features, but at the lowest possible cost. So that's basically what is the expectation from any business stakeholder. And that is the reason where, the industry is always stretched. People who would have worked in the industry, if you give a estimate of a particular functionality of, say, 6 weeks, the client would say, no, cut it down by, say, 2 weeks and give it to me in 3 weeks or 4 weeks, right? So the whole thing is that the industry works in a constant pressure. And also from the IT industry's perspective, that is a software vendor's perspective, the faster you build, right, the faster you'll be able to bill, right? So which means that if you are able to construct and deliver the functionality quickly, that means you will be able to invoice the customer quickly, which means that you are able to collect the amount quickly. That means you have a healthy cash flow. So your stakeholder value or the shareholder value increases because you are collecting that amount. Clients that have a previous bad experience with a software company are ready to enforce even micromanagement techniques. So they'll do a lot of micromanagement, saying that why this time, why the cost, why these resources, because it's like saying that they've had a wrong experience with a company in the past, and they would want to improve things. But improve things at what cost? Surely having a approach of doing a micromanagement might not really go well with the software vendor or the project manager. But because customers might have had a bad experience in the past, they might want to get over involved in a project, and that's where they would micromanage stuff. They would maybe override the project manager and then start pressing for unrealistic deliverables. And more often than not, people working in the software development industry say that it's really hard to do a proper estimation because of numerous different factors. And we'll look at those, but the top most according to me is unclear requirements, or requirements which have been communicated but not documented, requirements which are not clear in the first place, requirements that keep changing, or there are changes in the external environment, and hence it becomes difficult to incorporate those changes as the project moves on. Project estimation can even make some of the best project management experts nervous. Now, again, depending upon the criticality of the project, if it has to be delivered within a certain time frame, then even some of the best project managers can become nervous. So say for critical activities or critical projects which have to get delivered, maybe because of regulatory reasons, because of other pressures, so then there is no second thoughts. I mean, you have to ensure that the delivery meets the deadlines. Several techniques have been introduced over the past years to ensure that the process becomes systemic, and it's not just a gut feeling based guesstimate, or it's not a estimate that is based on some human biases, right? So the whole idea is that to introduce something that has been more time tested, and it's a process that is based on, say, set algorithms, set patterns, set input variables which can be used to generate a more predictable and a more realistic output, rather than keeping it more human dependent. Anyways, there is always an aspect of estimation where you have human involvement. Say things like expert estimation, where any which ways you rely on a subject matter expert or a domain consultant to provide those inputs, and that's where you know, these techniques can be more prone to gut-based adjustment. So the whole idea is to obviously have a more software-based or a tool-based estimation technique, and also combine that with the expert opinion that, say, a human would have, delivering projects over the years, having developed the kind of experience, the learning curve, etc., etc. However, what we say is the on-ground challenges are absolutely different from what gets envisaged. Lapses still occur, and it is still one of the toughest jobs for a project manager to do a right project estimation and ensure that the estimation is close to reality. That's the dilemma of a project manager. So let us now beef up our discussion around some of the challenges related to project estimation. The first challenge, as I said, according to me, is unclear requirements. If you start with unclear business requirements, you will certainly underestimate or overestimate the kind of work involved, especially in adapting and redesigning solutions. As I have always been saying, that requirements have to be captured from day one, and more importantly, ensure that you get this requirement from the right stakeholders. So just like the IT organization would have a project manager, there will be a single point of contact who would be the counterpart of a project manager on the software side. So on the customer side, there will be a project manager, and there will be a project manager on the software vendor side as well. So these are parallel roles. The project manager on the customer side is the one who would maybe say coordinate with the different business stakeholders to ensure that the requirements are captured. But even if, say, a role like this does not exist in all projects, where the project manager of the software vendor has to coordinate with the business owners, the important part is to ensure that the requirements get captured. A scope document is created. In certain cases, we call it the BRD document. That is the business requirement document. It could also be named as a scope document, a statement of work, a scope of work, so as to have a very clear set of business requirements. And more importantly, these business requirements get documented. Other important thing, according to me, is ensuring that this particular business requirements, once captured, are then signed off from both different vendors. So from both different vendors, what I mean is signing off this requirement from the customer perspective and the software vendor's perspective or the consulting vendor's perspective who is delivering the particular project. So then the entire dilemma of having an unclear requirement moves away. Again, as I said, all efforts should be made to achieve this particular state, but multiple times you still have a set of unclear requirements. And that is the most difficult challenge to estimate, right? If you don't know what is the baseline that you have to work on, so how would you estimate correctly? If the baseline is not really set, that means the estimation technique or the estimates that you've used might not be correct. Requirement gathering and creation have their own limitations, especially when the customer is not clear on what they want and when many design decisions have to be made. So if these particular decisions or if the designs or the requirement keep evolving over time, then the effort that is needed to construct the particular estimate and ensure that the low-level details get captured also keep changing. The lack of clarity is acceptable, again, if everyone acknowledges it and understands its consequence. So, as I said, it is important that both sides of the table understand the requirements and ensure that it gets acknowledged. The important thing here is that, again, as I said, I cannot stress much on the sign-off part because as working professionals, we face the sign-off day in and day out. The first thing when there is a discrepancy that pops up, the first thing that everyone will look at saying that where is the BRD document? Show me the sign off from the customer that they've accepted what has been earlier tabled, and then that gets used as the starting point. The next factor which acts as one of the top challenges when it comes to project estimation is the poor design. Poor design is frequently the root cause of failure, even when the best efforts are made. And why is this so? As I said, so if you have a design in mind, a design of how one particular functionality has to be spanned across, say, the entire project life cycle, or say if you are doing, say, a payment integration in a particular application, and that particular payment, say, it has to have say multiple different methods, but you've forgotten to maybe say add say wallets, right? Just an example. So then what you're saying is in your design of that particular module, you've captured only say internet banking as a payment option, and that could be valid. Maybe you have a proper business justification. But then after some time, the design has changed, and where you said that you need integration not just with internet banking, but also with wallets. Maybe you go a step beyond saying that digital currency in the form of bitcoins also have to be accepted. So what you're doing is you are kind of bringing about a change in the overall design. And because there is a change, that means the efforts that are required to enforce that change will also be more. So often people create a tight design on the basis of a requirement document, as I said. That is misconstrued as being frozen and do not show a forethought to make the design scalable. So assume that if a particular, say, method of invocation, say a way in which a front-end web page calls a back-end database. Okay, so let me kind of simplify it for you. You have the website which takes into account, say a reservation system of one particular taxi service, correct? This particular application takes your particular data from a backend database. Now, if you have changed maybe a password or a profile, and if that particular design is not really scalable, or you have say things like you have hard-coded the username and password while invoking that particular database, then the design, although it was a very tight design, but then it had to be scalable in the form saying that the design variables to invoke the database had to be passed on through a function. I know it can sound a little more technical, but I thought let me try to give you this particular example. If it makes sense, then it's okay. But the whole point is that if you have a design which was well constructed, and it was frozen in place, if it is not really scalable to change or take into account the new requirements, then it really doesn't help. So it's an example of a poorly constructed design. A poor design results in unnecessary code tweaking and also heavy duty maintenance. That puts a lot of pressures on schedules. So typically, if a real life example would be say having a static username and password in the way in which the front end application calls the back end application. If these variables are passed more as a function which can be changed, that means you are having a good coding practice, a good design practice. So when, say, this particular functionality has to change or during maintenance releases, it becomes easy to bring about the change so that it becomes more realistic in nature and can be easily made into effect. The other important challenge is while not splitting the top end task to get the right estimates. So while most problems have a work breakdown structure, but sometimes even while the work breakdown structure gets followed, they are not broken down to all the levels. So maybe there is a particular task and you just mention say level 1 and level 2, right? You don't mention the work packages, or even if you do mention the work packages, you don't go to level 4 and you mention the tasks along with it. So what happens is in this particular case, since accurate information or detailing of the work breakdown structure has not really happened, which means you don't have enough data points to put a proper guesstimate to each of these tasks. Collate the efforts of each of these tasks and you have a high level estimate, right? So the whole point is, if you're not splitting your top end business objective into smaller, deliverable, achievable chunks, you are not estimating or you are not setting a foundation to provide a accurate estimate. And if you recollect, these particular objectives have to be SMART. So that is SMART, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time bound. A lack of this, that is breaking down into smaller chunks, usually implies that there is no proper basis for estimation and it slips out just as a subjective guess. So unless you have that detail in place, you have the tasks listed, and then if you estimate for the individual task, which means you are doing a proper methodical estimate rather than just providing, say, a subjective estimate. The third challenge is not getting the dependencies right. So maybe a important example is you don't factor in, say, all the dependencies. So quite often, external dependency or a decision, if it is missed, then it causes the project to suffer. And this might be termed as coordination neglect. Say here what you see is, say, vendor's software product license might be about to expire, and say which would require the product to be tested with the new version. So what you're doing is, there was a dependency. So say a particular version of a product, say there is SAP version 9.2, correct? And it is running. And SAP has declared that end of support on a particular project. And the migration path of the 9.2 is, say, 11.2. So you need to ensure that that particular dependency is captured. Maybe 9.2 works on a monolithic architecture. Monolithic architecture means one particular application tied to a server, correct? And say the 11.2 works on a Kubernetes cluster. So Kubernetes is a technology where you have multiple different servers, and then there is a different hypervisor and so on. So the point to remember here is that you had a monolithic, that is a client server architecture in one of the product releases, and in the other product releases there was a microservices based a Kubernetes architecture, right? So if, say, the particular product was expired and the new product has to be built, then this particular dependency has to be taken into account while estimation. It would have an impact on building the entire system, it will have an impact on cost, it will have an impact on the resources who are building it, and more importantly, it will have an impact on the license of the product that gets installed in the new architecture. So these dependencies have to get registered. So a case in point, say a software getting expired, or say a hardware getting end of sale or end of support, that's where a new hardware refresh is needed. So these are the dependencies that have to be documented. A good understanding of the mandatory, discretionary, and external dependencies can help the project manager to plan the schedule. So as I said, dependencies could be, say, dependency in terms of the resources. Certain resources might already be involved in certain other projects, which need to be pulled to this particular project. So their time is important. Maybe some people are on vacation, are on leave, on sick leave, etc. So in those cases, those particular dependencies have to be taken into account. Also, certain hardware or software, as I mentioned, have to be taken into account while accounting for dependencies. Maybe it requires having a particular product key, or it could be, say, simple trivial issues like things like certificates. So when we talk about security certificates, it could be self-signed certificates or certificates that get issued from a certifying authority. Both could be possible. So when you get some certificates which are from certifying authorities, so these can be termed as external dependencies. Some can be internal dependencies, so like the example of resources that I gave, or other examples of external dependencies might be things like hardware getting end of support, new technology stack being introduced, software license product key, license key getting expired for the product, and so on. So the important thing is ensuring that these dependencies are known. If it's internal, then have a plan to kind of mitigate these internal dependencies, speaking to different stakeholders, ensuring that the stakeholders have the right kind of ownership, and so on. If there are external dependencies, maybe say dependencies on certain vendors, then ensure that they acknowledge the fact that there are dependencies and they own up these issues, so that these are taken into account while estimating the overall efforts for the particular project. The other big question or challenge when it comes to estimation is how much buffer is right. It's important to understand, as we saw, we should not have efforts that are underestimated, and also never have efforts that are sandbagged, so that it doesn't create unrealistic estimation. So a common challenge for the project managers is that there is no simple formula to pad up the estimates. So obviously everyone would want to have some degree of cushion, some margin of safety to ensure that what you have estimated is actually true. So there it's a common practice to pad up the estimates. But the $1 million question is how much estimation, how much buffer is it right for the estimation to be more realistic also, and ensuring that the expectations of the stakeholders are also met. So for example, it is observed that new programmers usually provide a very aggressive estimate out of the fear of being perceived as incompetent. Now, because they are freshers, they are new, they might not realize what are the dependencies, they might not have taken all the risks into account, and simply they might not have the experience of looking at the seasonality, the overall project, the different scope creep, etc., etc. They just give out a very aggressive estimate. Or maybe they want to be perceived as someone who is a go-getter, who wants to get things done very quickly, and so on. And that is the reason why maybe the new programmer is giving a very aggressive estimate. But having a very aggressive estimate doesn't really help, because they might have to work overtime to ensure that the estimates are met. When I say an aggressive estimate, that means an estimate which has a very strict timeline. So say if a realistic timeline for the particular task was 10 weeks, aggressive estimate might mean that you are trying to deliver it within 5 weeks. So that's the reason why you would see, say, a lot of burnout issues, people getting overloaded with work and so on. So the question remains, how much buffer is required? So you don't want to be in a scenario where there are very aggressive estimates, and at the same time not to be in a scenario which have a very conservative conservative estimate, that is an estimate which has a lot of cushion in that. So usually it is said that 20% padding is good, but again it's not a sacrosanct figure. The best figure is arrived at considering say the nature of work, people's skill set, and the overall complexity of the project. So as I said, 20% seems to be reasonable, but again, under what circumstances? Say if it's a regulatory reporting that has to go live, then is 20% padding better in a situation like this? Not good in a situation like this? I mean, the project owners, the stakeholders, and the project managers are best judge of that particular situation. So again, it's not a written rule saying that 20% is generally the best, but it's been observed that 20% is the margin of safety that you would take. But as I said, it's not sacrosanct. It depends upon the actual scenario. Thank you.